that you like or you can.
Oh, yeah. Why don't you do that?
Is this on? Anybody hear me? Woohoo! I don't think anybody can hear me because they're all still talking. Nick! Hello?
Welcome everyone to DNSSEC for Everybody, a beginner's guide. Please, as you're coming in, take a seat at the big rectangular table. We want you all up front so that we can involve you in our wonderful activities today. Trust me, it will be lots and lots of fun. So please come on up. We're going to start momentarily. We're just trying to fix something with the camera. But I think what we'll probably do is get going on the first part. Shortly, I'll get the slides showing, and then we'll get going.
Oh, it might be a 1. There we go.
Why don't we just get started?
Okay. So, hi, everyone. We're going to get started. We were originally going to be filming this with a camera, but we seem to be having technical issues, so we'll skip that for now. Yeah, the camera issues, we're fairly sure are not DNSSEC related, but some of the stuff is complex, so hey, it might be. So this is the DNSSEC for Everybody session, also known as DNSSEC for Beginners. So this DNSSEC stuff can be kind of intimidating. It's fairly complex and technical, has lots of buzzwords in it, stuff like that. So we're not going to be able to make you DNS experts here, but this should at least provide a general sort of introduction to DNSSEC. At the end of this, you can at least sort of use some of the buzzwords and people won't laugh too much. So before we get started, let me introduce some of the people who are going to be participating in a skit that we have. We have Russ Mundy, who is the principal network scientist for Parsons. His group also does the DNSSEC tools, and he's been involved in this for a long time. He's been organizing many of the workshops, things like that. Sitting next to him is Roy Ahrens. Hey, Roy. Roy is research fellow at Nominet, who's the .UK registry. Roy was also instrumental in creating a bunch of the DNSSEC specs, wrote some of the RFCs, etc. Next we have Julie, who... Louder? Any better? Can you hear me now? Really? Okay. Ow, that's bright. You know what? I can't stand there. I can't see. So next we have Julie. Julie helps organize this and keep us all at least somewhat truthful. Further down is Norm. Norm is the director of DNS intelligence for CrowdStrike. They're a cybersecurity company. Who am I missing? Oh, Jacques, who works for Sierra, who's the .ca registry. And I think that that's everybody. Somewhere we also have Dr. Evil, but nobody knows where he is. Oh, dear. So how many people here know anything about DNS? If you can just stick your hands up. Okay. And how many know anything about DNSSEC? Okay. Well, I'm sad to tell you that whatever you know about the history of DNSSEC probably is wrong. Yep, you probably think that it was invented sort of 10, 15 years ago. Actually, it was originally invented around 7,000 years ago. And it was invented by a bunch of cavemen. So this is one of them. Actually, I guess technically cavewoman. Her name's Aguina. She lives on the edge of the Grand Canyon. And here's another one of the inventors. His name is Og. He lives on the other side of the Grand Canyon. And Aguina and Og have a bit of a thing going. Let's just call it that. So, unfortunately, it's a long way down the Grand Canyon and a long way around. And so Aguina and Og don't get to see each other nearly as much as they would like to. But on one of their rare visits, as they're looking lovingly into each other's eyes, they notice the smoke that's coming up from Og's fire. Louder? And soon they figure out that they can use smoke signals. Okay, soon they figure out that they can use smoke signals to communicate with each other. And that way they can send love letters back and forth and arrange trysts and lunches and things like that. And then one day, this mischievous caveman called Kaminsky moves in next door to Og. And Kaminsky thinks it's kind of fun to insert random messages in between the conversations of Aguina and Og. So Og will be telling Aguina how much he loves her, and Kaminsky will start talking up bananas or something completely unrelated. And poor Aguina, she gets really confused. She has no way of knowing which are the correct messages and which are made-up ones that have been inserted by Kaminsky. So she gets kind of annoyed with Og one day. She goes all the way down the Grand Canyon, takes the 3-day hike across, goes all the way up on the other side. And Aguina and Og try and figure out what they can do. So they go along to the village elders, and they ask them for advice. Basically, they want some way so that they can chat without Kaminsky getting in the middle. And one of them, And one of them is a caveman called Diffie. And he sits there, and he thinks, and he ponders the problem. And suddenly he has a brilliant idea. He gets up, and he runs into Og's cave. And in the back of his cave, there's this really special sand. And one of the things that makes this sand special is the fact that it's only found in Og's cave. And Diffie picks up a big handful of it, and he runs out, and he throws it into Og's fire. And his fire goes this brilliant blue color. And now, Aguina and Og can carry on their conversation quite happily. Aguina knows that all she needs to do is only listen to the signals that are blue, because only Og could possibly have colored them blue. So Kaminsky can sit there, he can try and insert messages, and Aguina knows she can just ignore them. So, if you take one thing away from this little session, it's that what DNSSEC does is it provides sort of blue smoke for DNS. It provides a way for the recipient to know that the person who sent the message is the one who looks like they sent it. Only one person can insert the blue smoke, and so the recipient can determine which are the correct messages and which ones aren't. And with that, I'll hand this over to Roy, who will do a little bit of a presentation on the DNSSEC part.
Hi, everyone. My name is Roy Arends. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about DNS, a little bit about DNSSEC. First, I would like to have a show of hands. I know we did this before, but I'm phrasing the question slightly differently. Who understands that we have root servers in the world? Okay, that's good. So who understands on a basic level how DNS works? That stuff is delegated from the root down, etc., etc. Okay, so can I have the first slide, please? Thank you. So this is basically your standard DNS tree. We have the root on top. Root delegates stuff to UK, COM, Argentina. And under that, you have second-level domains, nic.ar, etc., etc., etc. So a resolver, an ISP's resolver or your company's resolver, basically knows where the root servers are. Joe Urscher, and we'll introduce him later, Joe has no idea what the DNS looks like. Joe can only talk to the ISP. The ISP will then go from the root all the way down to the level you want to be at, for instance, bigbank.com, gets the address, and the resolver gets the address. That information is cached for future use. Next slide, please. So at this moment, I would like to show you how we really do DNS. So this is a small skit, a small plane. We have a few players here. So the slide that you saw before, we don't have to go back, but the slide that we saw before, it had the root servers, it had com servers, it had bigbank.com, etc., etc. So while the team is sorting out their props, I'll introduce you to Joe User first. So Norm is going to be Joe User. He's your typical user. He's sitting on his laptop, on his system at home, trying to browse somewhere. He types in something in the URL bar, in the address bar of your browser. And everything that we'll show you here normally happens basically after you type in enter, or you type in a domain, right? After you type in enter and before you see the page. So what happens in milliseconds here, we'll show you what actually happens under the water. To be fair, that happens with computers and systems, not with real people. Because then we would be much faster.
And we could do with things being faster with us.
Okay. So we have Joe User over there. We have our ISP over here. We have the root server over here. I am com, and this is bigbank.com. So what you will see now is how typically a resolver acts. So I'm going to hand the mic over to Jacques Latour.
Okay, this is Joe User doing some internet banking, have to pay my bills. I don't know anything about DNS, I don't care. The only thing I know is every month I have to pay Mr. ISP for my access, and he handles everything. I have to pay the bill. So I sit down on my computer, and I just type in www.bigbank.com. Mr.
ISP. Thank you, Joe User. I'm an ISP. I've just been turned on, so I don't basically know anything. The only thing I know is where the root is. That's the only thing that I'm programmed to start with. So I don't know where the bank is, so I'm going to go ask the root. Do you know where bigbank.com is?
Bigbank.com? Sorry, no, I don't know where bigbank.com is. I do, however, know where .com is. .com lives at 1.1.1.1. You should go and ask him.
Thank you very much. Hey, .com. I'm looking for bigbank.com. Do you know where I can find that?
No, I do not know where www.bigbank.com is, but I do know where bigbank.com is, and it lives at address 2.2.2.2.
2.2.2.2. Hello, Big Bank. I'm looking for www.bigbank.com. Do you know where that is?
Well, as a matter of fact, yes, I do know where www.bigbank.com is. It is at 2.2.2.3.
Thank you very much. Hey, Joe. The address is 2.2.2.3 for bigbank.com. Good luck.
Awesome. So now I've typed in the web address for my banking site. ISP is given the number back. And away my computer goes onto the internet so I can do my banking. And that is basically how a DNS transaction works. It does it a bit faster in real life. But that's the basis of a transaction. What's that?
It's cached.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Now he's cached. The answer is you can see it in his belly.
Are you going to talk now or are you going to do the next skit?
Now we'll do the next part.
I need back my answer.
Somebody
give me back my answer. Because now we're going to do it.
Okay. Now what we're going to do is show you what a man-in-the-middle attack looks like. So this is this actually was the motivation behind DNSSEC. So we'll show you what that attack actually looks like using these wonderful actors again. And we'll do the same scenario over again this time with the man in the middle of attack. Okay, so here we go. I'm going to sit down, do some more banking, bills. Type it in, www.bigbank.com.
Thank you, Joe. You want to go to Big Bank? Let me figure it out where that is. I got to go ask the root first. Do you know where www.bigbank.com is?
I'm sorry, Mr. ISP, I do not know where www.bigbank.com is. All I know about is .com. They're at 1.1.1.1.
Oh. Don't ask them. Thank you. Hello, Mr. .com. I'm looking for www.bigbank.com. Do you know where that is?
I do not know where www.bigbank.com is, but I do know where bigbank.com is. Bigbank.com lives at address 2.2.2.2.
Thank you very much. Hello, Big Bank. I'm looking for www.bigbank.com. Do you have the IP address for that?
Oh, yes, I do. The address is 6.6.6.6.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Thank you very much. Hey, Joe, here's the address, 6.6.6. That's where you want to connect and do all your online banking.
Beauty. Thank you, Mr. ISP. That's great of you. So, and again. So I've gone to, or I think I'm going to bigbank.com. Dr. Evel here has injected his own address, and now he owns me. So my banking is now going to Dr. Evel. He's got all my $3.55. Okay, so what was done here, this is how a DNS works without DNSSEC. So there is such a thing as a man-in-the-middle attack. It has happened. It actually has happened to very large banks. But the part of the problem here is there's no element of knowledge between the different servers here in the tree, in the hierarchy. They don't share information. They aren't talking to each other. They don't even know each other. So if you remember back to the comic strips of the blue smoke, so there's a concept called the chain of trust, and this is where the authoritative servers actually share information, and they share keys, but that's like the blue smoke that they're going to be sharing. So if we go through the chain of trust,
Before we actually go to the new skit, there's some stuff I need to tell you. So remember this slide where we had Aguina on the left-hand side chatting with Ogg? In DNS terms, on the left-hand side, the beautiful lady over there, that's Aguina, she's the resolver. And Aguina is a modern woman. It's not just chatting with Ogg, the server, but with many different Oggs, many different servers. So next slide, please. And as you know, Aguina doesn't really know who the real Ogg is, or the resolver, in this case, doesn't really know what the real server is, because all this information that goes back and forth might have been spoofed. Next slide. And with DNSSEC, and we'll show you that in a second, Aguina is now able to distinguish between a false Ogg, or false server, or false information, and the real Ogg. And she does that with blue smoke. In the DNS world, we do that with DNSSEC keys and signatures, etc., etc. Next slide. So in DNS, there is really no security. This protocol has been invented around, I think, about 1982, 1983. This was way before the web even existed or was invented. At that time, a whole lot of researchers, a whole lot of networks were coupled together. But really no one thought about this thing being abused. So in this case, there's no security. These names are easily spoofed. And since DNS has this concept of caching, this spoofed information will now be cached. And that's called cache poisoning. Next slide, please. So we'll do a skit in a minute again. In this case, we had root, the original bigbank.com on the left and the false bigbank.com on the right. That's why it's in red, because red is bad. Next slide, please. So how do we do this with DNSSEC? Now, DNSSEC uses a concept of digital signatures. Basically, you create a key pair where there's a public key and a private key. The public key is something you can give to anyone you like. The private key is something that you store somewhere very, very secret and safe. The public key is basically nothing else than a bunch of bits. And since you can store anything in the DNS, like an address. If you want to look up an address, you ask for type A. You can also store keys in the DNS, and that's what we call a DNS key. So the public key is something that we can store in the DNS. When you sign DNSSEC, you create something called signatures. You do that with a private key, so the world who has public keys can actually validate or verify that. These signatures is, again, nothing else than a bunch of bits that can be stored in the DNS as well. So now we have DNS keys in the DNS, and now we have signatures in the DNS. So there needs to be a link, and I will show you that in a second as well. There needs to be a link between all these entities, the root.com, bigbang.com, and basically the glue is a little bit of a misnomer, but the glue between the root and com, and the glue between com and bigbang.com is something called a DS record. That's nothing else than a simplified version of the DNS key. The root's DNS key, the one that everyone has, needs to be in a resolver in order for the resolver to trust information coming from the root. Since the resolver now trusts the root has signed information about .com, so the resolver can now trust .com as well. .com has signed information about bigbang.com, so the resolver now implicitly can trust bigbang.com as well, and so forth, and so forth. Next slide, please. I already did this, sorry. Next slide, please. So in the same high-level concept, since we have signed all this information and we now have this chain of trust from the root to .com to bigbang.com, we can now properly distinguish between false information, which cannot be properly signed because the attacker does not have the private key that bigbang.com has. The resolver can now positively distinguish between properly signed information and unsigned or falsely signed information. Next slide, please. Now we do the skit with DNSSEC in place. So everything I just told you, we're going to apply that to the same skit that we did before. So can I invite my friends over again?
So hello, everybody. I'm the root. First off, the root needs to be signed. So I will sign myself. And hey, everybody, this is my key. Now I need to exchange keys with .com. Hello, are you really .com?
Yes, I'm really .com.
Great. In that case, we can exchange keys.
Thank you. This is a key exchange, basically. Thank you, sorry. What we just did, we're going to do again here. Hi, I am .com. Can I trust you to be bigbang.com?
I am bigbang.com.
Perfect. Then you deserve a star. Well done, Russ.
Thank you.
And now I have all of my zone signed, and so the address for www.bigbang.com is signed.
Okay, so now we're going to do a DNS transaction again, same thing. Again, with the man in the middle of attack, but this time we have the DNSSEC to back us up. Okay, same transaction, more bills. Oh, okay, actually I don't have any money left because I got ripped off the last time by Dr. Evil. Banking time, www.bigbank.com, Mr. ISP.
Thank you. You want to go to bigbang.com? I don't know where that is, so I'll go ask around. So now I'll go. I need to talk to the root. And then INF publishes the public key for the root, and I validate that. I know he's the root. So do you know where bigbang.com is?
Yes, I do. Bigbang.com is at 1.1.1.1. And give me a second. Let me sign this for you.
All right, I checked the signature that you gave me. The signature matches your key. We're all good. Thank you very much. I'll go talk to 1.1.1.
When you talk to him, his key is, and here's a really long number.
Thank you. IP address keys. All right. 1.1.1. Hello.com. I want to go to www.bigbang.com, but I don't know where it is.
I do not know where www.bigbang.com is. I do know where bigbang.com is. Big Bang lives on address 2.2.2.2. Here's a signature over it, over that information. And here's also the key for bigbang.com.
All right. Keys, verify, signature, check. It's all good. All right. I'm good. So I need to go ask bigbang.com for www.bigbang.com.
I know the answer. The answer is 6.6.6.6.
Thank you very much. Let me check the key. The key doesn't work. Hey, get the hell out of here. Thank you very much. So the address is?
And the address is 2.2.2.3, and it's signed.
Well, I need to verify that. Does it check? Yes. Perfect. Thank you very much. Hey, Joe. I got the address, and it's 2.2.2, and the signatures are valid.
Great. Thank you, Mr. ISP. So now I have a validated resolve to this number, and that's how the transaction works. If there's an important point there, you'd notice that me, as Joe User, I didn't have to do anything. I just asked same request, and it all happened up with the servers, with the ISPs and the root and the registries and the registrars and the domain owners. But it doesn't affect the users, or it doesn't put any onus on the users to do anything. So that's it. Thank you. Thank you. And, oh, yeah, and Dr. Evil, you have to really like that.
Well, thanks, everybody. This is we truly do try to make this the most fun session of the week. I don't know if we succeed or not, but we sure try. And we do indeed want to keep it informal. So there hasn't been any questions raised yet, but this is a very informal session. So if anything comes to mind that you want answered, please holler, raise your hand, whatever, and we'll try to stop and take care of it then or tell you exactly where it's coming. So my part here of the presentation of this session is to do really two things, to talk about, give a more specific example of hijack and what can be the actual result from an actual one. And then, yes, Olaf.
So I already have a question based on the little play you just had. I saw a person that had a strong French accent doing all this in English. Is it the case that you really need to use English language for DNSSEC, or does it also apply to internationalized strings?
Thank you, Olaf. Yes, it is. It will function, and it was designed to work with any data that's contained in the DNS. If it's IDN data, any other character set, it's from a DNS perspective, it's just bits. So it will work if you have other languages that you are using in your normal processing. So great. Thank you, Olaf. Okay, so let's go to the first slide, because we had our skit up here about DNSSEC, and you saw, you know, why you might want to worry about it. And the bottom line of all of this is that the DNS content itself needs to get correctly to the applications that are going to use it, or bad and unexpected things are going to happen. And it really is the end-use application that you're the most worried about. End users really think in terms of, at most, they think about the DNS as just the names. But the network infrastructure underneath and the mechanics of it all use IP addresses of one sort or another. And so you've got to get this translation correctly done. And that's where the hijacking takes place in terms of changing the actual IP addresses that you're going to use for the mechanisms that are going to move the bits around. And that's really another way of describing what a DNS hijack is. So when you do a DNS hijack, it's not really because you want to hijack the DNS for the DNS's sake. Nobody really cares. I mean, the DNS is important to DNS geeks, but for people that are doing real work on the internet, they care about their applications. And that's what the people are after when some type of hijack is done. And so one of the things that I found surprising, it was about 5 years ago when I stumbled across this, there is openly available software that'll let you do DNS hijacking available on the internet. But I found a couple of universities that actually required, as part of their computer science course, for the students to write software that did DNS hijacking. I mean, talking about it, and, you know, I don't know how much ethical usage kind of things they had associated with it, but I didn't see much. But I thought it really was unfortunate that they were really pushing to write code that actually did this. So there's a lot of code in existence out there, and it's something that obviously college students can do because they've been asked to. So when you actually are going to make use of DNS and DNSSEC on a website, you can use the information that's part of the protocol to do things that will help people see whether or not they're making use of DNSSEC when they get to those websites. It's not done very frequently, but there are a few sites that do it. And, of course, some of the sites that are associated with our projects do have this capability. And what we did is we modified. We have a part of our website is so that it can actually show a real live demonstration of a hijack of part of a web page. And so if we could have the next slide. This will show how the actual packets are flowing around, which is a different picture, but more or less the same thing what we just showed you with the skit. And so what happens, Joe User sends his query to his local ISP, local resolver, and it starts and does its back and forth across the network and eventually gets the answer back. And after the answer returns is when Joe User's machine actually is able to talk to the bank. So the application can't really do what the user is wanting it to do until it gets its complete DNS answer returned. And so when you have a DNSSEC-aware browser, the particular site that I was describing earlier is dnssec-deployment.com, and you can see in the top browser where the DNSSEC checkmark is on. And we're able to detect that by watching the DNS queries come into that particular website and if it has the DNSSEC capabilities and it's asking the right questions and properly processing the answers. We'll give them a DNS checkmark. If your browser does not have that, you'll get a DNSSEC is off. Just a little indicator to tell the user that's looking at the page whether it's on or whether it's off. So the equivalent of Dr. Evil is our Dr. Evil hijacker here. And so as the query is sent by Joe User, Dr. Evil observes through some manner that he's able to do, and it's if you're in the right place, it's pretty easy to do, what the request is. And so what Dr. Evil does, number two, he gets the answer back to Joe User prior to the real answer returning, because you can see in this illustration, it goes a lot further. The actual answer takes longer than the fake answer that gets back. Now, if you're using DNSSEC, just as you saw in the skit, what happens is Joe User is able to detect that the answer he gets from Dr. Evil Hijacker is invalid. And so he ignores that answer, and then he will get the proper answer from the actual location that's giving him a DNSSEC answer, and then he can get to the web server that he really wants to get to. So it's another way of illustrating what you just saw in the skit. And I didn't have all of root and all of .com, because if you put all of those machines in, it gets mighty busy on this slide. So are there any questions that anybody has? Yes.
Hossam Hassan from Egypt. Actually, I have a question, and I have read some RFC to get answer, but I cannot get that answer for my question related to DNS and DNSSEC.
Could you get a little? I'm sorry, I can't quite hear you. Could you get a little closer?
Actually, DNSSEC, it's build the trust relationship between the root and the other top-level domain, for example, .com and the other layer domains. Okay, but if the case is the hijacking happen on the resolver itself, I mean it's on ISP or on the end user, if the end user is using that its own DNS. Because actually, as I know, the resolver contains the addresses of the root servers. So if the hijacking happen on this stage, and it point or route the traffic to another root server, which out of that scope, so DNSSEC nothing to do with this. You got my question?
So I think I understand what you're asking. If you could end up as a resolver operator that's working for you, uses a different route that's not DNSSEC signed?
It's not DNSSEC by Lana. See, right now, as we have seen that trust relationship between the root and .com and underlayer domains. Okay, and here's a resolver. Okay, here the hijacking happened on the resolver itself, on the ISP itself, not on before going out to the root.
So, if the question itself gets modified.
On the roots, on the resolver itself.
On the ISP's resolver.
Yes.
Okay.
So it will point to IP address outside of the root servers. IP address, whatever, his server or another servers. It will be go out of the domain ecosystem. It will be go out to another server that may contain another root server database.
Okay. So there's, I think. Yes, go ahead, Wright.
I'll repeat the question first in the way I think I understood it. And I apologize beforehand if I got it completely wrong, which is highly likely. The way I understand your question is, what happens if the hints, the root hints, on an ISP's resolver are compromised? Compromised in a way that the IP addresses are changed to point to a completely different set of servers, not the ICANN root servers.
Exactly. Is this my question?
So my answer to that is, if the root hints are compromised, but the resolver is still capable of doing validation, because it has the DNS key, if it has the DNS key, it will still try to validate that information from the root. Since this is an alternative route, the information is obviously wrong, and validation will fail. That means that the information will not go to the end user.
No. Actually, the hacking happens on the resolver of the ISP before DNSSEC activated, by any means. Okay, the DNSSEC activated between the top-level domain and root server and underlayer server. But when it's initiated the traffic from the ISP, it points to a database or a server out of the DNS scope, another database, another ecosystem, another DNS database, and another. So at that stage, DNSSEC, nothing to do with that, and the hijacker can point to another on one click. This the IP address 6.6.6.6 instead of all of this journey.
So let me point a little bit here, and the resolver we're talking about is the one up at the top here, 10.1.1.253. That's where Joe User is sending his first query to. That's the ISPs.
Yes.
Yeah. So if any of the machinery of the DNS chain is, in fact, significantly compromised from a software running properly on that machine, the results are completely unpredictable. Okay, they can do anything to change anything.
Yes.
If it's compromised. And so you have to either have confidence that your ISP is working properly or not. And the point also of having reliance on a professional operation is they should do it right. DNSSEC cannot guarantee that your computer security requirements, your physical requirements, your other protection requirements will be met. And they do have to be met in addition to DNSSEC to be able to rely on DNSSEC. Warren, did you want to add something?
Yeah, thanks. So Warren Kumari, Google. Yes, if you don't trust your ISP's resolvers, or if your ISP's resolvers aren't trustworthy, they can lie to you. There are a number of people who've written software so that you can run your own resolver locally on your computer.
Exactly.
The Unbound software,
exactly.
For example.
And using his DNS instead of even ISP DNS.
Pardon?
Even the end user can use this on DNS instead of ISP DNS or ISP resolver.
Yeah.
So what, yeah.
And running something like Unbound locally on your machine, I think, is a really good idea, because that way you can bypass trusting your ISP. You don't have to trust anybody other than, you know, your own computer.
In fact, if you look at the browsers that I'm using in the illustration here, the browser itself is doing the DNSSEC validation. It happens to be what I have on my machine, and I'm sure most of these guys have something the equivalent on their machine. So it's not essential to rely on your ISP. Most people would be able to do it more easily and more quickly relying on their ISP, and they're going to rely on their ISP for lots of things. And so relying on them to do the secure and proper operation is one more thing, but it's not essential for the success of DNSSEC. Does that address what you were asking?
Sorry?
Does that address your question?
I addressed the issue, but actually, to be honest with you, I didn't find the right answer until now. From my point or my perspective, just how to secure the end user on the resolver point of view, not from the DNSSEC lifecycle.
Ross, I might suggest, just so we can move along, I think there will be a number of questions. Perhaps we should ask people to save their questions till the
Maybe
end of the presentation.
Should.
Thanks.
Let's go ahead and do that. Let's go on to the next slides. This won't take a whole lot more time. Now, in the upper side again, you'll see is called the Bloodhound browser now, is the name of it. It's a derivative from Firefox, Mozilla. And it has full DNSSEC capability, and so it did all of the checking. And the hijack was going on. So the hijacked information is not present on there. This is your regular browser again. And it is literally, if you look at the URL bar at the top, they were sent to the same place, and they were requesting the same information. You can see the non-DNSSEC browser did receive the hijack information, pointing out that Steve Crocker finally admits that DNSSEC won't solve world hunger. And so, you know, it's intended in this case to be a very obvious and silly thing, that it's something that's not real, but that was from the hijack. That's specifically content inserted from a DNS hijack. Now, you look at a web page and you say, oh, there's only that URL bar at the top. This is a picture of how many DNS queries it takes to fill sort of your standard commercial website 5 years ago. That's what it takes today. So to fill CNN.com, it takes a huge number of queries. And the important thing, again, is to get the zone data correct. And that's what DNSSEC is all about. The crypto is an essential mechanism to make sure that happens, but it's the zone data itself that really is the crucial information that you want to get to the right place in the proper state and be correct. So here's another picture that shows simply what happens. I won't go through the data flow, but it's another query response like we saw earlier. And of course, these slides are on the website, and if you want to refer to them later, that's fine, or make use of them, perfectly fine also. So this is sort of your standard query. And then the next thing is putting DNSSEC in. Depending on where you are in this whole chain of DNS, you saw an ISP here doing primarily a recursive resolver. You saw the root, you saw Calm, you saw Big Bank, and they all had different roles in the DNSSEC realm. And so wherever your role is for doing DNS-related things, the general recommendation is that you should do the same type of things when you go to do DNSSEC. So if you're doing it all in-house, because DNS is critical to whatever your mission is, whatever your function is, if you're a TLD operator, you're going to have a huge amount of DNS expertise. You should do your DNSSEC probably in-house with the same people because you have a very good, very highly qualified, competent staff. If you're an enterprise and you're outsourcing it to another activity, you should probably outsource it. Hopefully that same activity will be able to do DNSSEC, but if they can't, then you should look for another activity that would be able to do DNSSEC for you on an outsourced basis, unless you want to build DNS expertise in your own organization. So however you would do it, if you're an end user and you want to use DNSSEC today, if you're a Mac user, which there's more and more of, and the reason we built it first for Mac is it's the easiest platform to build for this sort of thing, you can get the Bloodhound browser right now today, and you can run DNSSEC on your end machine as your default browser. And you can do DNSSEC right now today yourself easily. Next. So the zone data, DNSSEC is what gives you that assurance. And it's what, when you, in the final word, what goes into DNS by the authorized people to put it in for a zone is what the DNSSEC tells you is getting to the place you're doing the validation, whether it's your end machine or whether it's your ISP. In the United States, a very large cable provider called Comcast is doing DNSSEC validation on all of their resolvers for something like 18 million customers. So huge base, very large ISP, and they're doing the ISP type of DNSSEC validation. You can still do it on your end resolvers, because I do it, because I'm a Comcast customer, I do my end resolvers too. So next. Oh, yes, thank you, Warren, I forgot. Yes, Google, anybody anywhere in the world, 8.8.8 and 8.8.6.6? 8844. 8844 and 8888 are all doing DNSSEC validation. So you can use DNSSEC validation right now if you want to. The link between the validator and your own machine won't have any particular security, but you can use DNSSEC by using the Google validators too. So in putting DNSSEC in, this is a simplified illustration, but really all you need to do is you need to get the data signed, and then you need to get it validated somewhere, whether it's on your machine or whether it's on your validating recursive server. This shows it on the recursive server. It can just as well be in the end machine. So, again, the general principle. Yes, Olaf.
May, just to put a number on that, Jeff Houston from APNIC did some research and looked at how many of the population that he sampled was protected by DNSSEC, and the size of that population, and this is a global experiment, is 8% of internet users, web browsing internet users, are protected by DNSSEC. That's largely due to the Google infrastructure, but that's a significant amount of internet users that are protected by DNSSEC from the customer side.
Great. Thank you. I forgot about those numbers. Yes. And so wherever you are for doing your DNS, whatever your DNS operation may be, you should use the same general approach for doing DNSSEC and make sure, and this is an important aspect, whoever your providers of your software or hardware or solution are, you need to make sure you ask for DNSSEC support. Because for many years, there have been a lot of providers saying, where's the demand? Where is the demand? And so people need to ask for it. And if you aren't, if it's not available now, this is also a time to maybe look at changing what some of the suppliers or whatever the source is. So that is the set of information that's for the planned presentations. And now we're totally open for questions, comments. And I do have one question I'd like to ask folks. I had the slides that showed a hijack and described the hijack. You saw the hijack in the skit. Would people make a comment on whether or not you'd like to see it done for real so we could set up a wireless network and hijack your computer or hijack your computer? Would that be valuable to people? We're getting a yes? Anybody? Okay. Because if this is something that's desired, we'll look at doing it for the next ICANN meeting as part of this to show people this is real. It's not just slideware. Okay, well, anybody, if you have other comments on that, yes, in the back?
I have a question, not a comment on that. The floor is open for questions now?
Sure, go right ahead.
Okay. Noha, and my question is more as an end user, more than being ICANN fellow. Talking about all the threats and safety issues about the DNS, I want to know, does the same thing apply to the applications? Because for most of the frequently used websites, we use now applications. We don't go to the website. So do applications add one more layer, or is it more risky to use the applications?
Julie, could we go back a couple of slides to the one that has the before that with the a little more? Boom, boom. Close. There. That's the one I was looking for. So the browser that you saw is an instrumented browser that does DNSSEC. You do not have to have applications that are DNSSEC aware, but it is very useful if you do, to be able to see the content. Next slide. To be able to see that content, the checkmark, you do have to have DNSSEC aware applications. And there is work going on for application programming interface that there's actually been a fair bit of work on that over time and trying to get it through where applications can standardize it.
I interpreted your question slightly differently. So non-browser applications, anything basically, stuff on your iPhone, right? Can it use DNSSEC? DNSSEC is basically independent of the application. So if any application would use DNS, and your resolver or your ISP's resolver is DNSSEC able, capable, and stuff is switched on, yes, then everything, all applications would benefit from it. I hope that answers your question.
May I put a different spin on this? Whenever you use the internet, whenever, with everything you do in life, how you organize your life, essentially you use the DNS, whether it's your agenda, whether it's the news, whether it's sending mail, whether it's sending an IM, a mail message, whether it is doing a telephone call over the internet. Everything in the back end uses the DNS as a resource to get somewhere. And all these attack vectors, all these things that I just mentioned, have value, and hence are also an attack vector. If you turn on DNSSEC, you introduce an extra layer of security for those applications that are not necessarily things you type in or use, but use the DNS in the back end. That's the same answer in different words.
Yes. Thank you, Olaf. Do we have a mic in the back?
Yeah, we do, actually. It's a remote question, if we could.
I did not hear you, sorry.
We have a question on the chat room right
now.
Oh,
perfect.
Uh-huh.
Go for it.
This is from Adebumi Kimbo. Hopefully my pronunciation is okay. Question is, how does a ccTLD deploy and implement DNSSEC? What is needed to make sure it works? And who are the parties that needs to be involved?
Okay, well, I actually happen to work at a country code top-level domain, UK. We have gone through this exercise, but you've asked, this is for the person in the chat room, it's a very broad question. If I would answer that, it would be a very, very long session. But nothing here is new. A lot of country codes have already deployed DNSSEC. There's an enormous amount of information out there. There's dnssec-tools.org from Russ, basically from Russ's company. Essentially, what you need to do, you need to sign your zone, you need to securely store your keys, you need to get your DS record up to the root server. You need to do an enormous amount of testing, because when you sign stuff, it basically means that you give some kind of you basically have other people authenticated. You better make sure it's correct. So it's not rocket science anymore. Maybe 10 years ago it was very, very hard to do all this. But nowadays there's a lot of tools out there, a lot of documents out there. Russ and his slides have many, many different links that contain all that information. Maybe Russ would like to elaborate a little bit?
Well, I just wanted to point out that some of the counting that's going on, approximately a third of the TLDs are signed in the root zone now. So it is, and it continues to grow. Its rate of growth continues to increase. And earlier, as I talked about, however you do your DNS function today, if you're a TLD provider, if you will, an owner, and you have a registry partner that's an operator, you may already have a registry partner that already is capable of doing DNSSEC, and it may be no more complex than discussing with your registry partner if they currently do DNSSEC and have it turned on for your zone. Or it may be, as Roy talked, starting from ground zero without actually having it in, doing the planning and doing the testing and making sure that it's right before you turn it operational. Over here. Ah, yes, please, go ahead. I need to stay out of the lights.
The green button. All right, thank you. Has DNSSEC been used for email? And because 40% of the world's email is spam. And I work for several companies as a consultant that send out hundreds of millions of emails. And the biggest problem is getting the legitimate emails caught by the spam filters. So what's being done in the DNSSEC world that would help that situation? Thank you.
Well, as Roy, I think it was Roy that mentioned earlier, or maybe Olaf, that any applications that are running on a machine that's using DNSSEC can take advantage of it. So to this point, there has been some implementations that are specifically pointed at SMTP and even IMAP being able to see whether or not DNSSEC was used underneath of it. But the most current activity that's going on is some work in the IETF that would make use of the DANE a technology in conjunction with DNSSEC that would help strengthen the SMTP to SMTP links. Roy, do you want to?
Thank you. For email, for communication between MTAs, basically, there is this thing called DKIM, DMARC, etc., etc. So these are protocols being invented, deployed, standardized, etc., etc., that eventually can make use of things like DNSSEC or any kind of security mechanism, basically, that is based on a cryptographic principle. However, and I really like this quote, it's not my quote, it's from someone else. Bank robbers wear seatbelts too. And DNSSEC is a seatbelt kind of technology. It only solves a small part, the DNS part. If spammers use DKIM in such a way and eventually use DNSSEC, then you haven't solved the spam problem that way. I hope this helps. Sir?
Hi, I'm Paul Donohoe from the UPU. We're the sponsor of DotPost. Hi, Russ. We've met before in Italy on a DNSSEC conference. Thanks for your very simple explanation of a very complex topic. I have a couple of issues that I wanted to ask you about. The first is DotPost is entirely DNSSEC, so all of the domain names in DotPost are DNSSEC signed. And it's a challenge for our community. Particularly as a GTLD, we're really doing a lot of work in Africa and South America and Asia for domain names. And we find that there's a very slow adoption within the infrastructure within those areas. So one of the challenges that we face is, and one of the questions I have for you is, how do we get greater adoption within the infrastructure in these countries? What can we do to encourage the adoption? And the second question is sort of related. How, as a user, I'm sitting in front of my computer, how as a user do I feel more comfortable with a website that I'm currently at? How do I tell that this is secured in general computer use? And this is one of the questions that many of users of DotPost domains, I tell them, we're using DNSSEC, it's all signed, it's all secure. But how does the end user feel that comfort, feel that security if they're using some of this general software that's available every day? Because that's, I think, one of the challenges.
I'll try to answer that. Let me first repeat your first question. And I'll make it a little bit more generic, if you don't mind. The question is, how can we help the adoption of DNSSEC, right? For within the second level domains, under, for instance, .post or new GTLDs.
Sorry, yeah, just to clarify that, I already have all of the domains signed. So it's how do the owners of these domains have access to DNSSEC security so that this signing can happen? I have the infrastructure in place in the registry already with my registry operator, and I'm asking people to give me DS data. How do they get this DS data? They need to have that capability in their infrastructure already, yeah.
Okay. Go for it. Yeah.
Now, if you're asking about the names underneath of DotPost to get those signed or the... Okay. So the registry operator is ready at DotPost, but whoever is operating the DNS at the next level, whether it be a country, which I would guess in DotPost's case that would be very common, or another entity for, say, the settlement things or whatever. If there's not a policy mandate for it, people are reluctant because it is hard. As Roy said earlier, there's a lot of tools. There are a lot of things that are available that are free. And so it becomes a matter of knowing about them, knowing where they are, and if the people at the next label down have the expertise to do it. However they're operating their DNS today, if it's being done as a service and outsourced for them to another name server type of operator, then they need to find out if that name server operator is capable of doing DNSSEC. And if they're not, the big lever there is that they'd take their business to one that would, because there are a number of name server operators that are trying to make their stronger business case because they do DNSSEC. But unless there's a policy stick, there's, you know, it becomes a matter of helping lead them with a carrot rather than a stick.
There was a second question as well. Maybe on the topic of the first question, Sweden and the Netherlands, SE.nl, they're basically the poster boys in terms of adoption of DNSSEC. What you see there, I think part of the reason of their success is they did a little bit of marketing and a little bit of give basically a discount if you register a domain and have DNSSEC deployed. That's one way of going. Not sure if that's the right or the wrong job. Your second question was, how does the end user sitting behind a browser benefit from all of this DNSSEC stuff? Is there a signaling mechanism, basically? How can a user see that it's behind a DNSSEC validating resolver? How can it feel secure? Currently, in production, there's no such thing. So all the browser vendors, basically currently, if you download a browser, if you use a browser that comes standard with OS X or Windows, you won't see a thing. There's nothing there. So basically, it's mostly deployed, if it's deployed, it's mostly deployed at ISPs or geeks like us, top-level domains, et cetera, et cetera. But currently there's an effort on the way to get a signaling mechanism. And Olaf Kalkman is right here. He has, I've heard him say this afternoon something about a project that he's doing together with a very large top-level domain in order to get that signaling message, or at least to get a standard about the signaling mechanism towards the user. I don't know, Olaf, if you can elaborate on this.
Yes, I can. So I've been interrupting enthusiastically a few times or making additions a few times without introducing myself, I guess. My name is Olaf Kolkman. I work for Anelnet Labs. And Anelnet Labs has been working with guys like Russ in a small community for over a decade to look at DNSSEC and DNSSEC deployments and see where we can make a difference. With respect to that, what you just mentioned, what we are now interested in is that specifically that last mile. How do you get DNSSEC to the user, and how do you get it into the application? So there. The question that you had was basically a user interface issue. That's not where our specialty is. But also those applications will need to know whether DNSSEC has been used. Current APIs, so the current application programmer interfaces, do not offer that capability. And there's work underway within the ITF and within a bunch of people who are trying to develop an API that would offer that capability to programmers. That might take a while to get there. But I want to do a step back because I had a different approach to answer your question. Did some thinking about what does it take to do innovation of this type on a global scale. We have the same question with IPv6. How do you innovate at the core infrastructure of the internet? Now, if you look at innovation in general, there is work done by marketeers like Everett in the 60s, and they basically looked at what are the things that people consider when making a choice for adaption of an innovation. And then things like relative advantage, the complexity and simplicity of an innovation, the compatibility, the triability, and the observability of an innovation come into play. That observability of an innovation is just what you just talked about. How can a user see there is an advantage to using this? DNSSEC is technology that lives under the hood. And so it has all these issues that I just described, relative advantage, very hard to see. It's very hard to give that message. But it is there, and it's a long-term. It's all long-term advantages that we're talking about. And it is all long-term security for a global infrastructure. So it's not directly something you turn on for yourself.
specifically at the side of the provisioning side. It is something whereby you protect the common good of the internet and help to innovate. What we've been thinking about collectively, I think we share that mindset, is how can we make sure that the triability and the complexity and the compatibility become lower, the barriers to that become lower. That's by doing free software and by creating tools. For instance, the tools to do the signing, which are available in many open source projects. And indeed, another part of that relative advantage is creating incentives. In the Netherlands, there was basically a subsidy. If you sign your domains, your registration fee becomes lower. And it's a matter it's a small amount. But for hosting companies who have like 100,000 domains, that was a very interesting proposition. So it's, as a registry, at the registry level, those are the levers you can pull. Can you make sure that your community of users have easy access to the tools that are needed? And can you give them a financial incentive and give them a relative advantage? But that is all from a drive for public common good. I hope that sort of gives a less technology perspective on the question.
So I totally agree with the infrastructure issue, and that's why DotPost actually has adopted a policy of 100% DNSSEC, because for securing the transactions that are going to be happening across our infrastructure, it's vital. I just want to come back to the observability issue, because once again, it's the end user who is really going to drive adoption, because that's the business. So I think that we'll have a discussion offline about that, because I think that's a really interesting thing that we should be focusing on.
Right, and there's also the our other session that we have, the full day session on Wednesday. A lot more of the topics are talked about in a lot more depth. And one of the important topics that I think will help in terms of getting things to the user level is the incorporation of the DANE technology, which you've mentioned a couple of times here. And you can hear more about that in depth on Wednesday. We can talk afterwards. But that is also something that is very much moving the a way to move the information in front of the user so they can see. More questions? Back in the back, or is this a chat room question?
Yes.
Please go ahead.
This is a question from Carlos Watson. What is a challenge by the ISP in order to promote adoption DNSSEC into the resolver that they manage is an issue to resolve? Around the world has several hundred million of public DNS. Thank you.
I didn't really catch. Did you catch the question, Roy? I didn't really get enough.
Would you mind repeating the question and maybe rephrase it slightly?
So what is the challenge by the ISP in order to promote adoption DNSSEC into the resolver that they manage is an issue to resolve?
Okay. If I got the question right this time, I think the person was asking what it takes to get the resolver operators around the world to implement and begin using DNSSEC. Does that sound close to what the question was, I think? Yeah, okay. Well, one of the important things that is a big factor is that there is a demand. Everybody in this room can go back and look at what your ISP is doing, whether it's your work ISP or your personal home ISP. If they are not doing DNSSEC, and there's a, 8% is a pretty good adoption from what we were seeing before, but that still leaves 92% that aren't. Go ask for it. That's one of the biggest drivers that there is for people to raise the issue and raise it in a way that they understand it. So demand is the best thing if you're talking about a competitive kind of environment, like ISPs most are. In other environments, some countries, it is still government controlled and still heavily government influenced. And so those that are able to work with the governments that may be involved in controlling this aspect should work to promote the ISP adoption. Warren.
So yeah, Warren Kumari, Google. So what a number of people have done, like Comcast made somewhat of a sales pitch with this, is there's a small cost to enabling DNSSEC on your ISP resolver. You know, it's a little bit of additional overhead, it's a little bit of work, but it's not that much. But what you can do is once you've enabled it, you can tell your users what a great job you're doing of aiding them with security. You can use this as a fairly good sort of marketing trick or sales trick to tell your users that you care about them, you care about keeping their interactions on the web safe. And so ISPs can use the fact that they do DNSSEC as sort of a differentiating factor. I know that if I was trying to choose an ISP, I would rather choose one who seems to care about security and wants to help me keep my banking stuff safe than one that doesn't. So I think sort of using this as a sales tactic is a very good trick. And also once a number of ISPs in the region do it, if you're not one of the ones that are doing it, and something happens to one of your users, they could legitimately ask why you weren't doing everything you could have. You know, were you doing your due diligence to keep them safe? And so eventually, if you're not doing it, you could be opening yourself to some legal risk in some jurisdictions. I don't know if that was helpful,
Excellent.
Coherent.
Excellent. Okay. Yes, Joyce, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that I understand the whole thing, and so maybe you can clarify that for me. In terms of these DNSSEC players, so if the root zone is signed and the DNS server provider, the company that manages the DNS server, that's also signed, so all the domains are signed, then who else has to also do that kind of job in order to do that? From what I heard, you said the ISP, for example, at home, I'm using cable company to access the internet, right? So are they also responsible if they wanted to do that? They also had to do that DNSSEC things? I thought it was once the name server's signed, it should be secure. So this sounds like a lot of players had to do chip in their work.
Okay, so let me see if I can clarify this for you, Joyce. What you saw earlier in the skit was the first part was doing it without DNSSEC and asking the query and getting the answer. And our Mr. ISP, Jacques Latour, was the one that was going and doing all of the questions to the various name servers. After that, then Dr. Evil came in and took it from the very last place, but he could have taken it anywhere along the way. Now, when you sign everything, if you don't have a validating name server resolver, like Mr. ISP in our skit, Jacques here, then the user wouldn't even know whether or not the data had been signed, let alone having the information to do the validation. So there is an important role for the resolver or ISP operator to actually, or the end user, to do validation of the queries. So first you have to get the data in and get it signed. That part you had absolutely right. But unless the validation of the correctness of that data is done at the time of the query, you do not get the advantage of DNSSEC. Does that difference make sense?
Yes, but when a domain is signed, DNS is signed, You're talking about the application API, and this website is developing what kind of the API for people. Do they also have to, the API, the program they develop, they also have to be signed in addition to the domain name has been signed?
No, the applications do not have to know anything at all about DNSSEC. As long as their DNS resolver is doing the DNSSEC validation, whether the resolver is on the actual user's machine or in the ISP. Applications don't have to. It's better if they do, but they don't have to know anything about it. Okay. More? Any other questions? I think we're close to the end of our time. Oh, one in the back. Yes, please. Do you have a mic?
Craig Nesty from Dominica. I noticed in your skit, at the last step, when the hijacking was taking place, one of the guys, the hijacker did not run DNSSEC. So the resolver basically caught that. My question is, what happens if you have a host server who does not run DNSSEC and everybody else runs DNSSEC? Is DNSSEC backward compatible with the just normal DNS? Or would it reject that website completely?
The design of DNSSEC accommodates things that are not signed as well as those that are signed. And so if in getting the answers to the DNS query, it comes to a point in the tree where there's not DNS signatures present, that's clearly identifiable within the DNSSEC protocol and the way the DNSSEC resolution works. It recognizes it as not signed, and it will just work, and the information will get resolved. So it won't be rejected if it's not supposed to be signed. Yes.
Agustin Sacramento, I'm a developer at NIT Argentina. I could make an application that detects the sign of every step of the chain. I make a cell phone application. I want to make it to I want to program to tell me that the connection is the DNSSEC. Could I detect it?
There are implementations that run on cell phones now. Some of the things in our toolkit run on Android and MAMO, which are cell phone OSs. And so it's certainly very doable. And if the data is signed, it will be validated. And so it's a matter of examining, you know, what your code base is, what the application is that you want to use, and then proceeding with, you know, reading the specs and writing the code. So, yes, it's very doable. And we'd love to see more people doing it. So please, go for it. And if you need help, this is a very incredibly helpful community. Our tool site gets a fair amount of traffic. Internet Labs gets a number of questions about both what they build and about help for things that are doing. People that are doing more in the DNSSEC world. So, yes, please proceed. And it is achievable. It's not necessarily that easy. But if you're familiar with the platform and the software, go for it.
So, Russ, we are a couple minutes past 6:30. And so we, you know, could take maybe one more question.
And Julie, there's been a gentleman kind of behind the pillar over here trying to get your attention. If we could go over here.
Please go ahead, sir. I can't see you, but you've been recognized.
Yeah, my question is there any relationship between DNSSEC and SSL? Secure socket layer.
They are actually two independent protocols. Okay. They're complementary to each other, if you will, that one works just fine with the other. You'll get stronger security if you use both in terms of your total security, but they are separate and they can be run at the same time on the same machine. And I suspect some of these guys sitting over here are doing it. My laptop's not on, so I'm not, but I do it all the time. And it's very good. Multiple security at different protocol layers is a good and useful thing to do.
Thanks.
Did that get your question, sir?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Thank you. I guess that's it. Well, thank you, everybody. This has been a really good session, and we try to do them each time. And if you're at the next meeting, you're certainly welcome to come and join in again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mike.